broadband internet service providers in Real Simple Syndication are proud to bring you
Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night.
Thank you very much for listening to Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night. That is Carlin.
And that is Jordan.
And we are here to discuss one of Carlin's selections,
Reanimator.
And as you can tell, it is a horror movie.
And actually, if you look closer, it comes up just as Reanimator on Netflix.
Right.
But if you look at like IMDb, or if you potentially have a DVD cover of it, it is H.P. Lovecraft's Reanimator.
Yes. It is a classic H.P. Lovecraft story. You can find it online. Most likely it's in public domain. So if you looked on Project Gutenberg or something like that, you could find the story and go ahead and read it and enjoy it for what it is.
Anyone familiar with H.P. Lovecraft knows that he's very, very influential in the horror scene.
Yeah.
Very great gothic horror short stories that he did. When I knew that this was an H.P. Lovecraft story adaptation,
right,
I jumped onto IMDb.com and looked up how many writing credits H.P. Lovecraft actually has. And he has 123 writing credits on there.
You know, it's crazy. Right now, I am actually, one of my side projects for this past year is to go back and read all of H.P. Lovecraft's stories. And it's really interesting to see, you know, his style. And, of course, for his time, he was, shall we say, a little bit on the harsh side, especially in terms of views like racism and how to treat women and everything like that. But like his storytelling and the ideas that he has, when it's taken in the context of its time, is really interesting, and he does a really great job of evoking a sense of horror.
And that stuff endures to this day.
Yes.
And for anyone who doesn't really know about H.P. Lovecraft, he was alive in the 1800s. I believe he was born in like 1829 or something.
I thought he was an early 20th century writer, actually. Like he was writing...
Maybe I switched it up. Maybe he was born in 1892.
Yeah, because I think you're thinking more of like Poe.
Yeah.
Because he died in like the... In the 20th century, I know that, early 20th century. He was only, like, in his 30s, too. He was not very old when he passed away. He was a pen pal with Howard, who wrote all of the Conan stories.
Oh, interesting.
So if you ever look at any of the pulp writers and everything like that from the early 20th century, Howard, Lovecraft, all of those guys, Burroughs, who wrote Tarzan, they all worked together and they were all corresponding with each other on a very regular basis.
I will say this was my pick because I am a horror fan, love that kind of genre. And the other thing that speaks to me, well, I guess the main thing that speaks to me about the horror genre, and I think is really seen in this film, if you really analyze it and pick it apart and look at how they do their effects and everything, is that the horror genre is typically where creativity and problem solving truly, truly shines.
Yeah.
A lot of those films are very low budget, so they have to, you know, make the money stretch, and they need to find out interesting ways to do things. And a lot of the times they're kind of doing cutting edge practical effects. They need to figure out their own way to create something. And I saw a lot of that in Reanimator. You know, anyone who's actually watched it, if you go back and like really, really look and just think, well, how did they think of that? How did they come up with it?
How did they come up with the effects to make this actually work? And, you know, this was an age when they made this film, 1985, when they didn't have, you know, the CGI effects that we have today. I mean, you look at other films from around the same time, Little Shop of Horrors, all that type of thing is done with actual physical effects.
And in my opinion, it's much better than CGI because, I don't know, it feels more realistic if you can see it and know that it can be touched.
Yes. Yeah, and to see an actual interaction with something rather than someone looking at like a green screen lump,
yeah,
you know, that just makes a world of difference.
It truly does, especially if you have someone in your film like, you know, Jason Statham or whatever.
That being said, let's go ahead and move on to the technical information for Reanimator. So, like I said, it was made in 1985. The director was Stuart Gordon, who's known for a lot of his other horror movies, such as Dagon, Fortress, and Space Trucker.
Truckers.
Yep.
The well-known Space Truckers.
The very well-known. It is one of the most influential films of the 20th century.
Obviously.
Right, so.
Behind, like, Jaws.
Yes. So, the Netflix summary for the Reanimators. Based on a story by H.P. Lovecraft, this campy send-up follows a medical student who develops a serum that miraculously revives the dead. With his roommate and his girlfriend, he reanimates a corpse, but he doesn't factor in certain complications.
And I will say, a little backstory on how the idea for this film came about.
Mm-hmm.
Gordon Stewart had a conversation with a friend one night about how he was kind of sick of vampire material popping up so much, especially in film. And he was already a filmmaker at this point, and he said he wanted to see something more like a Frankenstein film done at that point in time, because he hadn't seen much of it. And he's like, I really like to do like a cool Frankenstein something. And one of his friends was like, oh, well, I recently read this H.P. Lovecraft short story that's a little bit Frankenstein-ish, and it was Reanimator, which actually is called, I believe, West's Reanimator?
Yeah, West's Reanimator.
West's Reanimator, which refers to the titular character, Herbert West,
right,
in the film.
Yes.
So he then looked into this short story after his friend told him about it, and he loved it. And he's like, you know what? I would love to adapt this into a film. Hence, we have Reanimator now.
And it does have a certain flair of Frankenstein about it. It also has a bit of a zombie story aspect to it as well.
I think it's a lot more, I mean, looking at it in this day and age, it's a lot more zombie than it is Frankenstein.
Right.
Truly.
But for the time that it was made, I can see where the Frankenstein, especially because of you think of the mad scientist doctor,
mm-hmm,
trying to bring someone back from the dead. You don't think of zombies. You think of,
right,
that more as a witch doctor type of thing. This is pure science, you know, quote unquote science.
Obviously. Science?
Science! All right.
I also want to say really, really fast, very interesting thing I also found out when I was researching this is that there was a musical adaptation of this on Broadway in 2011.
Really?
Yes. The Reanimator, the musical in Broadway.
I think they're going to pretty much do anything that they can think of as a musical on Broadway.
Yes.
I mean, like, Little Shop of Horrors was originally a movie done in the 50s, and then it was made into a musical, and then the musical was shot for screen, and now it's a popular Broadway musical now again.
Well, they have all sorts of stuff. I mean, I believe they did Repo, the Genetic Opera on Broadway. They've done Trey Parker and Matt Stone's The Book of Mormon.
Repo actually got to Broadway?
Yeah, I believe it did.
Wow.
I think it did. I mean, don't 100%
I mean, I know it's a,
that,
it, was
I
a
me, so.
It was a play before it was a movie,
mm-hmm,
but I didn't know that it got to Broadway. Wow.
And if you think about it, like, Reanimator, it's a horror genre, and Sweeney Todd,
of course, is
a musical.
And, you know, I hear that for a lot of people to get into musicals, Sweeney Todd, podcasting.
You're thinking of The Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah. Sweeney Todd is actually one of the most influential films to get people into musicals.
I believe it.
So, anyway, the actors for Reanimators, Bruce Abbott starred as the main character, Dan Cain.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been in some things. Black Scorpion was one of his works. He's also appeared on MacGyver, and he was also on the movie The Last Starfighter.
Oh, great movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just saw that for the first time not too long ago, and I really enjoyed it. Another individual who acts in this movie is Jeffrey Combs.
Oh, that's my dude.
Yeah.
That is my dude.
That is the titular Dr. Herbert West.
And he is just so conniving in this and just serial killer-ish.
Oh, my gosh. You know, it's like watching his performance. He's like, this guy is a sociopath.
Oh, 100%. But he's doing it all for science?
For science. And some other works that Combs has starred in is Voodoo Man, Contagion, and Elf Man.
So he's stuck in the genre.
He's kind of got a genre thing going on. Just about as much as Barbara Crampton does. She plays Megan Halsey, and I quite enjoyed her part in the movie.
Yeah.
She was really good, I thought. Actually, she was one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Good looking, too.
Very much so.
All of her.
Yes. And we will get to that. The Godson, Body Double, and also the aforementioned Space Truckers.
She was also in one called Chopping Mall.
Chopping Mall.
Is on my DVD queue for Netflix at the moment.
And then Dr. Carl Hill was portrayed by David Gale.
Ooh, what a creepy guy, too.
Yeah, man. And he's done a lot of work. He was on a TV show called Guns of Paradise. He also did a movie called The Brain and then The Gold Diggers.
He's a guy that, just looking at him, reminds you of a mortician.
Yeah.
Kind of actually like the tall man in the Phantasm films.
Yeah.
Very much like Angus Scrimm.
Well, I mean, it's like, the thing is, he was born to play a mortuary scientist, you know? And
yeah. Certainly. Certainly.
It just makes sense. And then finally, the last person we'll mention as Dean Halsey was Robert Sampson. And he did The A-Team, Annie's Garden, and Hill Street Blues as some of his other works.
And honestly, he may have been one of the people... Actually, I would say he is the person in this film who had probably the toughest acting demand
mm-hmm.
for him because of what happens with his character.
Yeah.
And we will get to that
later. Yeah, absolutely. Later. It was distributed by Empire Pictures, and it was shot for a budget of $900,000. So, under $1 million, which...
That's cheap.
For the mid-80s, for a feature-length film, that is very cheap.
That is cheap.
So let's go ahead and dive into the movie itself.
So it starts out pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm.
We're in Switzerland. I believe it was in Zurich. And we're in a hospital setting.
Yeah, and you know what? This is funny because the hallways in this set, I don't know if it's the same building or not, but it reminded me quite a bit of the insane asylum that you see in The Mouth of Madness, which is another H.P. Lovecraft movie from the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Also a great film.
Also a great film, yes. It's streaming on Netflix, so we might actually have to do that.
Maybe. One. And anyone out there, go ahead and just check it out now.
Yeah.
Because it's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so things get crazy. You hear yelling, and a nurse rushes to a room and opens it up, and she has some, you know, people backing her up.
Yeah.
And what do we see there? We see a doctor freaking out.
Yeah.
And in the room with him is Herbert West.
And they're just yelling and screaming and... And then all of a sudden, the doctor's eyeballs just start bulging out of his head.
And then they explode.
And then they explode, and there's blood everywhere.
Especially on the nurse.
Yes.
Blood splattered from the eyeball explosion.
Yes.
And that was, you know, from the get-go, you see these practical effects, and you wonder, man, how did they do that?
Well,
that's interesting.
It was simple, Carlin. It was a ketchup bottle that they were just squirting off screen.
Not quite. No, not the spray of blood, the exploding eyeballs.
Right. But one thing I did want to mention about this scene was when I was watching this, I just was thinking, I know that this is a story about people coming back from the dead,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I know that it's about a mad scientist working on this particular resurrection problem. So to me, I was a little skeptical going into the movie because of the update for the time frame.
Right.
Because, you know, it's easier to imagine 1920s medicine having this idea of, well, we can come up with this serum that will kickstart the brain and bring somebody back to life, rather than the 1980s when healthcare is a bit more sophisticated.
True. Yeah, I totally see that. One thing I want to point out that's very important for that scene that we just spoke about is that the nurse says, "You killed him."
Yeah.
And what does Herbert West say?
He says, "I didn't kill him. The dosage was just too high."
Well, he also said, the first thing he said was, "I gave him life."
Yes.
So it leads you to believe, not right then, but later in the film when you get the whole context of it, if you look back and think about it, you believe, oh, he was already dead.
Yeah.
He'd been injected with this serum, and he was brought back to life. So he did give him life back, but he may have killed him first.
Right. We don't know what happened behind closed doors before the nurse came.
And that's ambiguous in the film.
Yeah.
We don't know. But since we already talked about the serum, I will point out that the intense fluorescent glowing serum is iconic.
Oh, yeah.
Very iconic, especially for horror fans. You know, if you see anything like that in a bottle, people just think, Reanimator. It's Reanimator.
Now, how do you know exactly how they achieved that effect? Was it actually like phosphorescent liquid or...
I don't know for sure, but I could guess that they could get it from just having highlighters, a yellow highlighter sit in water and kind of leach out and then put some sort of small light source inside of it.
That might have been a good... Yeah, because, I mean... Every time you saw it, it wasn't just like a golden or like a greenish color, greenish gold color, but it was actually glowing.
It was emanating a lot of light.
It was putting out a lot of light.
And that wasn't done in post.
Right. And then right after we have the eyeballs explosion extravaganza, we cut to the very first scene where we see Kane, and he's actually working as a medical student in a hospital trying to resuscitate someone who's in the emergency room.
And it doesn't go well.
No, it doesn't.
Person passes away, so then he needs to go down to the morgue, takes the body down himself. And this is where we first see that the security guard at the door of the morgue, not so good at his job.
He's pretty darn relaxed about what he does.
He doesn't really care. And in his defense, though...
How many people are going to get up and walk out of the
exactly.
morgue?
And that's what he says. I wrote down the quote, and he said, "Don't know why they lock the doors around here. Nobody walks in, and ain't nobody getting out." Which is foreshadowing.
Of course.
Because, in fact, people will get out of there.
Lots of people.
So he unlocks the door for Kane, for Dan Kane, and he goes in with the dead body and goes about his normal business where he sees an autopsy going on.
There's an autopsy happening. There's actually quite a few dead people in the morgue itself. It looked like they had actually had a very busy day.
Quite busy.
So I don't know if I'm going to go to Miskatonic University Hospital anytime soon for for healthcare.
And that is another thing to point out real quick. The university that they're at is called Miskatonic University, which is a university that's oftentimes used by H.P. Lovecraft.
It's very much a setting of his. Miskatonic University is up in New England, and it's kind of his fictional stomping grounds for anything that's ghastly or ghoulish or out of this world.
Yeah, so that word is... like directly associated
red
with
flag.
Lovecraft.
Red flag.
But, you know, just like Cthulhu, you know, things of that nature. So, from there, we see the part of the autopsy take place in front of a class.
Yeah.
And it's pretty grisly.
And this is actually where we meet Herbert West as he's coming in. Well, actually, we meet Herbert West. Was it in the autopsy room or was it in the classroom? Because I thought we met him in the autopsy room and then he was in the class as well.
Yes, correct. He's in the autopsy room first. He kind of walks in, I believe. Yeah, he kind of walks in and he's just kind of there.
Yeah.
And then he's more introduced
more
and has some real interactions later on.
And he apparently thinks that the lessons that Dr. Hill are teaching are a little bit antiquated.
Right. They have... he and Dr. Hill have an issue. The tension is addressed very early between those two because Hill makes a comment about the brain activity only being like, what, six to 12 minutes after death. And Herbert West basically scoffs at it and says that that's not true, creating this immediate tension that you can see between the two of them. And Hill's kind of looking at West at like, first of all, who are you? You're a student. Second of all, you know how established I am.
It doesn't help that West seems very disconnected from reality around him.
Sociopath.
Yeah, sociopath, really, honestly. Yeah. So it makes a lot of sense that he's just kind of, you know, there. But as Dr. Hill is giving this lecture, he like shows how to peel a skull.
Yeah.
Which was, if you are not into body horror, we recommend that you either close your eyes... or just kind of fast forward a little bit because it can get... This part of the movie gets a little gruesome.
And with all the autopsy stuff and, you know, like decomposing bodies in the film and all of that kind of stuff, it's important to note that the director actually referenced a bunch of forensic pathology books in order to try and get the practical effects as close to realistic as possible.
Which is appreciable. I mean, because it's good to know that some of the effects later on in the movie are based on real pathology because, well, we'll talk about that in a little while. But, I mean, the way that they handled it with, like, peeling back the skin of the skull and the bone saw and then, like, the viscous nature of the brain.
Yeah.
That really kind of
Makes you a little squeamish.
It made you squeamish, but it really drove home what the movie was going to be about.
Oh, yeah, and how things were going to look.
Yes, absolutely.
So that all takes place, and at the same time, Dan Cain is looking for someone to move in with him.
Yes.
He has a girlfriend who is with him from time to time, and that is Barbara Crampton's character.
Yeah.
What's her name again?
Her name is Megan Halsey.
Megan, that's right.
Megan. And it was... I love their introduction because the first thing you see is them hugging in a hallway, and she's like, no, stop, don't kiss me. And then it's a very sudden cut to an intimate bedroom scene.
Yes, an intimate bedroom scene. And then... After that is when I believe Dan posts a piece of paper at the school.
Well, he's posting the picture when Megan comes up to him.
Oh, correct. So it's before they're actually right.
And then as she's trying to leave the apartment, he's chasing her around in the apartment with just a sheet wrapped around him. And West is at the door when she tries to leave.
Yeah, Herbert West has found this wanted ad for a roommate, mm-hmm. and he comes to the house because he would like to look into living there.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, I took a close look at the address when he picks it up. It is 666 Darkmoor.
Oh, that's not a clue. No.
If that's not some sort of omen.
No.
I don't know what is.
I mean, it sounds like a perfectly legitimate address to me.
So Wes shows up, and in his typical terrible social skills way, is kind of very imposing and is very pushy about wanting to see the place for rent now.
Right.
And it's at night.
Yeah.
It's dark.
And he's just kind of standing there at the door. He doesn't even knock. He just kind of waits for somebody to open the door.
Which is very creepy.
Yeah.
Super creepy.
Yeah, and then he's like, I have my things right outside. I'll move in right now.
Yeah, and when he got, like, the grand tour, he goes into his basement. Creepy basement. Very dark, dingy, just super creepy.
It's amazing that an apartment, has a basement like this.
Yeah, and West flips over this basement. He's like, it's perfect.
This is amazing.
It's all like, it's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, the only thing that it's missing is a moat and a drawbridge.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it looked very dungeony.
Yes.
So he goes nuts over that, he loves it, and, you know, Cain is like, okay, kind of reluctantly, it seems.
Well, and Megan doesn't seem to like West at all.
No.
In fact, she's like, don't take his money. When West is holding out the money, she's like, no, don't take it. Yeah. In fact, why don't we go ahead and listen to that clip right now?
Oh, yes. Yes. I think this will be just fine. I have my things outside. Shall I move in now?
Look, I have to go. I think you and Mr. West have a lot to discuss before you decide anything.
Oh, I've decided.
Well,
you'll never even know that I'm here.
Dan.
Except, of course, on the first of the month.
Mr. West.
Miss Halsey?
You didn't say why you left Switzerland.
There was no more I could learn there. Do we have a deal?
Done.
So as you can see, this is something that... Dan, you should have listened to your girlfriend.
Well, one thing we see in this film is Dan gets pushed around a lot.
A lot. Yeah, everybody pretty much has Dan's number, and he's not really able to get free from anybody until the very end of the movie.
He is truly one of the kids in high school that drank, did drugs, all of that, because his friends said to.
Mm-hmm.
Anything he's told to do in this film, he does it.
Yeah.
With very little reservation, just because I guess he's very weak-willed. So Herbert West is moving in.
He's moving in, and he's a big fan of the cat.
And by that we mean one day, Megan and Dan are in the apartment, and they don't know where Rufus
the cat?
The black cat, went. Yeah. And... you know, Megan's looking around, and she goes into West's room, opens a miniature fridge, and what's in the refrigerator?
Why, it's a cat.
A dead cat that looks just like Rufus.
Yes. And, you know, the amazing thing about this scene. I love this scene because as they're looking for the cat, there's a little bit of soundtrack, you know, a little bit of music at first, and then it just slowly dies away. And all you hear as they're going through the apartment is Megan just going, pss, 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 here, kitty, 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 Rufus. Yeah. And then she, you know, they, it's this one long shot that like follows her into the bedroom, and it's really slow.
It's
and,
a real nice build up.
It's gorgeous. And the creepiness is there, and you know, you can see on the walls that he's got like anatomy posters and everything like that. Typical bedroom decorations for any enterprising young doctor.
Of course.
Yes.
So they find Rufus the cat in the fridge, and obviously Megan freaks out. Obviously Dan freaks out.
Yeah.
And this is when West comes back.
He walks in and he goes...
And West freaks out.
Yeah.
But what does West freak
West
out about?
West is freaking out because they're in his room.
What are you doing in my room? When I rented this, I was assured that it would be private.
Private room, Dan. How dare you be in my... Well, how dare my cat be in your refrigerator?
Right.
You know, and the thing is, Dan actually acts guilty that they're in his room.
Exactly. Which goes with the weak-willed...
Yes.
Dan.
Dan.
Dan! Dan, grow a pair, buddy. So, West explains it away. He says...
Oh, I came home and the cat had stuck its head in a jar and died.
Yeah, it suffocated. And then I couldn't just give you a phone call or leave you a note and say, cat dead, see you later. He's like, it would break... It would get, have you too broken
up. I was going to present you with a dead body and tell you...
I guess that's how he does it.
I would do it that way, wouldn't you?
Not quite. So he explains it away, and Dan believes it. Megan does not. She's still very uneasy about the whole thing.
Yes.
So then we end up going to nighttime.
Yes.
When Dan is, he's hearing something.
Yes.
Some really strange noises going on, and they sound creepy and crazy.
Yeah.
He goes to the basement where they're coming from, and he, what's going on?
Well, he falls down the basement.
He does.
Falls down the stairs, you know, and they're just, and there's this thing in the basement attacking West.
Yeah. A fuzzy black thing.
And what's great about it, I love this because at this point, the lighting for the basement is like a single bulb on a cable just hanging down.
Right.
And it gets knocked. And so it's swinging wildly all over the room, creating all sorts of shadows. And it's just this really visually pleasing atmospheric trick that just sucks you into the movie. It was a really great technical detail.
And that helps add to the chaos of what's happening. And what is happening is Rufus,
the reanimated cat,
is attached to West's back.
Yes.
Yowling and screaming and attacking him.
Oh my goodness.
And Dan jumps to action and helps West. And kills the cat by throwing it against the wall.
And then beating it with a shovel.
And then beating it with a shovel, yes. When he originally throws it against the wall, there is some matter that sticks to the wall.
Yes.
Which is that kind of ick factor.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a horror movie. Expect that.
Oh, yeah. Definitely expect that. So, then this is where Dan needs to know what the heck just happened here.
One thing I wanted to mention about, like, the scene in the basement also, in addition to the light, they cut out all the music. So rather than going for, like, the tense high-string stings, they just cut it out. And the only thing you hear is these guys flailing around the basement, knocking pots over, knocking over tools and everything like that. And it was just this great atmospheric thing there that helped pull the movie together even more.
Right, and the noise that the cat's making.
The noise that the cat was making.
It's like, like this high-pitched, yowling cat screaming, but it's been changed digitally to sound, like, demonic.
And you know the crazy thing was, though? Cats, when they start making noises like that, actually do sound pretty scary.
Yeah,
I had two cats fighting outside of my bedroom last night. That freaked me out.
Yeah, it can sound crazy. And this was that kind of sound, but they did some digital distortion to it to make it sound like it was reverberating a little bit, and it just sounded like a little more high-pitched and demonic. And it was, crazy.
And at this point, you know, Dan is asking for explanations, and he's like, you know what, I don't care, I'm going to the dean, we're going to You're not going to do this any longer.
And Wes pulls him in by saying, hold on a second. I figured out a way to overcome the 6 to 12 minute limitation to brain's activity after death. He says, I've overcome brain death.
Yes.
And Dan is intrigued.
He is a little bit intrigued, but I also think he was more afraid. Because West threatens to go to the Dean, Dean Halsey, and report that Dan is sleeping with Megan.
That, yeah, he
so there is blackmail. There is extortion here, you know.
And then Dan's like, well, I guess I'm stuck. So he asks some questions. He wants to know what the deal is now with how he's figured this stuff out. And so he goes ahead and reanimates Rufus again.
So this poor cat has already died once. By how he actually died, if it was by suffocating, we don't really know. But then he dies again,
mm-hmm.
and then he's reanimated for a third time.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about it is, before he reanimates him, Wes is like, look, he's not going to be able to move a whole lot because now his back's broken. And so when he reanimates him, it's really creepy because he's just laying there. He's like all squished and he's just like kind of like trying to flail, but he can only move like his head pretty much.
Yeah.
And these nasty noises coming out. It's a creepy moment. Very creepy.
That probably was one of the most horrifying things through this. Even worse than the peeling the skull, like the scalp back on the
certainly
on the body earlier in the movie. This was just so creepy because it's like you're looking at something that someone had obviously loved so much. Rufus was pretty much Dan's best friend, it seemed like.
Yeah. Probably Megan's best friend.
Megan's a little bit more than
I mean
friend.
Dan would have to say that yes. to her, I'm sure.
Yeah. But
I'm sure Rufus was there first.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that ends up happening. And then Dan is railroaded into helping West. So guess where they want to go then? Let's go to the morgue.
Let's go to the morgue. I call this gorilla revivification in my note.
Hey, yeah.
Because, I mean, if you're just going to sneak into a morgue and, you know...
Revive dead bodies... And that's what they do. They go in, and it's interesting because they start looking through all the bodies that are in the fridge.
Yeah.
And they're saying, oh, this one died this way, this one died this way.
No good, no good, no good. Oh, well, here's someone in his mid-20s who just dropped dead. Let's use this one.
He's like, there might be some heart failure or some heart damage, but other than that, pretty healthy for what we're using it for. So they reanimate this guy, and actually Wes says that he needs to try... and guesstimate the dosage, because he's not done this on... And doesn't he say he's not done it on a human before? But that is a plot hole, because he did it... Well, maybe he specifically didn't do it with the doctor in the very beginning of the movie.
Are you saying that it could have been the doctor that he was working with?
It could have been. It could have been.
But, I mean, the only person that we saw... The only two people we saw in that room were West and the person he was bringing back to life.
Right.
Which I kind of took... from the way that they were talking, to be his mentor.
Right.
So the mentor had done some experiments previously, and West was just continuing on with his experimentation.
Possible. But at any rate, he does say at this juncture in the morgue that does not know the dosage.
I mean, at this point, I could accept that he didn't know the doses because the doses that he had tried before had caused the dude's head to explode.
Okay, I could see that.
And also... I don't think West is someone who tells anybody the truth whenever he can.
That's a good point.
So I interpreted it as West was lying to Dan. Not that he was telling the truth, because West will not tell the truth unless he absolutely has to. He was lying to Dan to get Dan to do this with him.
True. So they do then juice this guy up. They inject into the back of his head.
15 cc's isn't enough. 20 isn't enough.
I guess not.
No.
So the guy comes to life.
Finally.
And it's immediate rage.
Oh, yeah.
He rages out. He's fighting. He's trying to kill West and Kane. And things don't look good. And at this time, who is coming to find them?
Oh, it's Dean Halsey. Because Dan was in trouble for helping West. And West had been suspended from the school.
Yep.
Nope. So
he then finds out that Kane had been seen in the morgue area, to which he says he's not supposed to be allowed here at the moment. He's suspended.
Right.
And then he goes down to investigate. Megan is with him, but he makes her stay back.
Yeah.
And he goes into the actual morgue. Well, while he shows up into the main portion of the morgue, he hears all the commotion in the body fridge, we shall call it. And he's trying to get in. And he doesn't get in. The reanimated body gets out over him.
Yeah, and pretty much he's banging on the door, and doesn't the reanimated guy just push the door off its hinges and just runs over him?
Yes, runs over him, and then actually
ends up killing his body and throws it against the wall.
Which ends up killing him. And then they end up. Megan shows up at that point.
Yeah.
And then they kind of have to, she gets involved and they have to save her too. And
well, the thing is that they've juiced Halsey because they're like, well, this is perfect. We've got a corpse right here.
Yeah, they do that. They juice up Halsey to try and make it look like he's still alive. Partially that, partially, hey, it's a very, very fresh body.
Let's not waste this opportunity.
Exactly. Which Kane just goes along with, of course. And they end up killing the one reanimated body that's going crazy. And the way they do it is disgusting. And another moment of how did they figure out how to do that? How did they think to do that? They take one of the bone saws, the electrical bone saws that they use to open the cranium.
Yeah.
And bore it through the back.
West just goes right through the rib cage.
Yeah, through the back, out the front of this body. God. And that kills the real.
Well, and the thing is, though, that was the only... That West was kind of throwing that body away. That because, I mean, there is no way that with the heart completely gored out like it was, that you could even think about bringing that body back to life for another time.
Right.
So that was really interesting that he was pretty much just... Rather than killing it in a way that he could, that would minimize the damage, he just went for the complete splatter factor.
Yes, and that's one of the charms of this film, you could say.
One of the quaint charms of Reanimator.
So from there, what happens is Halsey is seen to just have gone kind of crazy.
Well, that's what people think.
That is what people think. They think he's a nut job, so he gets thrown in a padded room, in essence. And being observed, and then Dr. Hill shows up and gets involved in things. We do find out later that Hill uses, he's just like West. He seizes the opportunity to use this person.
Yes.
For something that he's been working on, which is a lobotomy with lasers.
Yes.
And he lobotomizes him. So basically, he's kind of like double zombie eyes in a sense.
Yeah, it at least calms him down.
Yeah,
it does. You know, which is kind of a blessing.
Yeah, because otherwise he would be nuts. Yeah. And it comes out later that he does this to try and control him.
Yeah.
So he basically has this idea. Once he actually finds out about the serum that West has... he has the idea, I can reanimate bodies with this nice serum and then lobotomize them and tell them what to do and they'll listen to me. They won't be raging out and trying to kill me.
Yeah.
I can be a zombie master in a sense.
You know, but one thing that we didn't mention about Dr. Hill was the dinner where they had with Halsey, Megan, and Hill.
Yeah.
And that's a very important scene in the movie.
And go ahead. He amps up the
up the ick factor by most definitely hitting on Megan. And not just hitting on her, but in front of her father.
Who is she's less than half of his age.
Yeah. She's 18, 19, maybe in her early 20s at the oldest.
Yeah.
And he's at least 50.
Yeah.
And it was just...
It's nasty. Oh. But then we see the same kind of thing from him when her... This is the most inappropriate time for it. When her father is in the loony bin.
Yeah, he's in the padded room and they're in the... They're right next to him in this room that he's in. And, he has Megan pinned against the glass.
Yeah, and he's just getting...
And he's coming... it's almost like he's going to try and rape her at that point.
Yeah.
But then her father bangs into the glass, mm-hmm. you know, in this terrifying jump scene that I wonder if Independence Day was trying to make an homage to this.
Oh, you could be correct with that. In Independence Day, when the doctor has the alien tentacle coiled around his neck, yes. and he just, out of nowhere, bangs up against the glass.
It's exactly Maybe. Like that in...
It's very similar.
In Reanimator.
True. And the interesting thing about him banging up against the glass at that moment is it's as though the father senses that his daughter's
that
in trouble.
That his daughter is
and
in trouble.
And you see this later on, that he's not totally gone.
Yeah.
That he still has some feelings deep down in there.
Yeah.
So Hill successfully gets even creepier, makes it very, very clear that he wants to get with Megan, that he really wants to get with Megan. So everyone's just kind of feeling dirty at this point. I want to go shower.
I want to go shower right now.
So then Hill believes, now's the time. Now is the time for me to go have a little chit-chat with West.
Yeah. So he goes to the apartment and heads down to the basement and finds the entire basement refrigerator full of reanimation serum.
Yes. And he basically has a confrontation with West and says, I'm taking this.
Yeah.
This is now mine.
Yes.
So he takes the serum from him. And in return, West takes his head off his body.
Yeah, chops it off with an axe.
No, wasn't it a shovel?
It was a shovel.
What happened
it was the
is,
same shovel that Kane had used to kill the cat.
It was great because Hill was very focused on looking at something through a microscope, I
yes.
believe. You know, looking at his findings from the serum.
Which I kind of wanted to know what he was going to be seeing in there. Because
yeah.
if it's chemistry just mixed together.
Right. So during this time, he's very focused. So... West takes the opportunity, he very slowly starts backing up,
yes.
which Hill doesn't notice, and then grabs a shovel, slams him on the head, which gets him on the ground, and then just takes the
blunt end and...
Well,
the sharp end of it. Yeah.
And just rams it into his neck and severs his head off. And then there is a very comedic moment where he picks the head up off the ground and goes to set it on his table. And he wants it to stand up, but it keeps falling over.
Yeah.
And then he picks it up, and it falls over. And he picks it up, and it falls over. So then he comes up with a solution. And Jordan, what's his solution?
Oh, I don't even know if I can say it. It's like the basin, right? The pan that he puts it in? Yeah, he takes, like, it looks almost like a cookie sheet.
He does have a cookie sheet, but he uses something to help the head stand up within that pan.
I think I blanked out on that part.
What, the thing that you can see in, like, old diners that are for the written-up tickets,
oh.
that it's basically like a metal spike that
yes.
sticks up on a stand.
So he just...
He had one of those. He just puts it in there, and then he shoves the head on it so that it's just standing upright.
Ugh.
Pretty gruesome.
Ugh.
But it was this comedic moment because he's trying
yeah.
to get it to stand up.
And the thing that I had written down in my notes here is that, Dr. Hall is quite the conniver until he gets his head off. Of course,
But then not true, because he continues.
Well, the thing is, West has this brilliant idea. Huh, I have a head here. Can I just reanimate a head?
And he does.
The crazy thing is, though, that somehow the head is still... psychically, I don't know.
Linked to the body. Yeah.
And so this, as he's like looking at this head, trying to like do science,
yeah.
The body stands up behind him. And it's like...
Which is a great scary moment
yes.
for people who are... I mean, I don't think anyone would be expecting
I was not expecting it at all.
Unless you've seen it before.
No.
That would be it. So the body comes up and I believe knocks out West. And then, I guess when West would be coming too, the head and the body are gone.
Yes. With all the serum.
With the serum, correct.
Yes.
And then we see some more comedy gold, honestly, as the headless body is carrying the head of Hill. And
yeah.
he's like, just fumbling around,
yeah.
kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes to his office, and he's trying to kind of get things together. And it's funny because... The body sits the head down
yeah.
on a table, and then he's, You could tell it's like trying to do a remote control car for the first time.
Yeah.
He's having a hard time controlling the body and getting it to go where he needs it to go. And he's kind of getting frustrated with his own body.
Yes.
And the music that's playing at this point is kind of comedic as well.
Yes. Yes.
And so the body's like banging into things and falling over. It's pretty good. Pretty funny stuff.
One thing I wanted to mention was, like, West, note to self. If you're going to be a mad scientist, don't go around indiscriminately shooting your reanimation serum into dead brains. don't know what... If the environment is not controlled, then you're going to have problems.
The thing is, he just got syringe happy.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
It's just, you know, once you start, you can't stop, yeah, I guess.
I know.
I mean, the serum's so addictive. So, one of the really cool... probably the coolest shot in the film comes up when Hill decides to pay a visit with his severed head to Dean Halsey.
Yes.
When he's in his little crazy bin. And he's looking at him through the glass.
Yeah.
And Halsey comes up to the other side of the glass, which is...
one way.
It's a one-way mirror. And he's looking, but the way they do the scene is the head's being held. Hill's head is holding his own head, and the reflection shows his head basically on Halsey's body.
Yes.
In the reflection. And it's really cool. It looks awesome. Mm-hmm. And it's creepy. And it gives you the idea that this is the brain control.
Yes.
That he's talking about. It's like, yes, his head on Halsey's body.
Yes.
So he's in his head. He's in his brain. He's going to control this guy for his own dastardly deeds.
Nefarious deeds.
Yes. So after that...
Oh... Well, I mean, you can only fantasize about a girl so much,
mm-hmm,
before, yes, you just have to act on those feelings. It doesn't matter if you've been decapitated or not.
Get the one that you love.
You've got to be with the one that you love. And where what's the best place to take your new romantic interest?
Probably to the morgue.
I think that would be a good place. That's, yeah, where I would take her. Yeah.
Romantic. Oh,
all you need are candles and maybe a little violin music, and you've got yourself the perfect date.
Oh, yeah. So. And that's what Hill does. He takes her there. And we see, once again, the guard is quite inept. He slips right by the guard.
Well, I loved this. This was the part where he had, like, the mannequin head that he used to describe, like, different parts of the brain. It looked like an old phrenology prop.
Right, and that was put on the top.
That was put on the top of the body. And he's carrying his head in a suitcase.
Yep. And they get right past that guard.
Hi, guard. How are you?
No problem. And they get inside there. And he starts deciding that he's going to have a good old time with his lady. So this is probably where we get to the roughest stuff of the film.
Yes.
And there's full-on nudity at this point, which I want to bring up the MPAA real quick.
We do need to talk about this, don't we?
Because I'm watching the film and I'm thinking to myself, how is it that the MPAA allowed Reanimator to have an R rating,
mm-hmm,
when... they show full nudity, mm-hmm, for Barbara Crampton's character,
yes,
including pubic hair.
Yes.
And not only that, but then Dr. Hill takes his severed head and places it between her legs, her spread legs that he has tied her.
You know, this is one of those things where you just look at it and you go, because it's very obvious
What's going on.
Megan does not want this to happen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's rape, yes, without the body. It's, yes, just the head is raping her, uh-huh, in a sense.
Well, and then the body starts feeling her up, too.
That's true. You are correct.
You know, so it's the full kit and caboodle.
Yeah. That kind of thing in a film is disgusting and creepy enough. But when it's a severed head involved, and then the headless body is also involved, and they're at different ends of this.
Yeah. And would it be considered to be reverse necrophilia?
I guess so.
Yeah. It's like, this is like as nasty as you can get on film. Yet, the rating is R.
How is my question on that?
Well, remember what we were talking about when we discussed this film is not yet rated a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
One of the points that they brought up was that it seemed that it would get an R when the sexual acts were not about female enjoyment.
Ah.
But when it was true. NC-17, when the girls were having fun, that's when it was a problem.
And this is a clear situation where Megan is not having any fun.
This is Megan's worst day ever.
I think that's safe to assume.
Yes.
Then Kane and West show up, and they are going to save her. Oh, hold on. Go ahead.
Her dad is there.
Yes, that's right. As Hill's minion.
Yes.
Actually, Hill, her father's the one that brings her in.
Yeah, he brings her in, and he, like, chains her down to one of the tables and everything.
He's complicit in this.
Oh, my God.
He is being controlled by Hill.
Yes.
Indeed.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. And, you know... Imagine this being a bad situation, but then having it compounded, because she doesn't know that her father had died. You know, she's just seeing him acting crazy.
Yeah, she thought he was mental.
Yeah, and so imagine the feeling of betrayal that she must have when this is occurring.
Yeah, because he's involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's crazy. So then Kane and West show up to try and save the day, and they confront Hill.
Yeah.
They're like, we're going to get you out of here. We have a plan. They say something about having a plan. To which Hill says, I too have a plan.
So do I. And all of the dead bodies just sit up at once. It was a fantastic jump scene.
Yeah, it was great. And at that moment, I was like, what a scary, awesome surprise at the end of this film to just have these bodies just pop up and be like, ugh. And so it's the big fight at the end of the film.
Yes, and there are, oh my gosh, the way that I wrote down this particular effect, because it was the most amazing effect in the entire set piece of the big climactic end fight, was the intestine python of doom.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. One of the bodies gets... is it actually Hill's body?
I thought it was Hill's body.
Yes. Yeah, Hill's body basically gets blown open.
Yeah.
And his intestines fly out and wrap around... Is it around...
It's West.
Oh, it's West. That's right.
And starts he hates strangling West.
Yeah, starts strangling. Yeah, it does look like you were saying, like a big python just wrapped around him trying to strangle him to death.
It's like, that is amazing. It's...
Once again, great practical effects.
And incredibly creative...
Hey, the creativity of horror films. Unbelievable. Yes. So the fight goes on, and while the fight's happening, you see Dean Halsey. He's starting to waver in his thinking. He doesn't know if he's feeling... He doesn't know how he's feeling anymore. He's not totally controlled by Hill anymore. And eventually, that deep-seated humanity that's still inside of him comes to the forefront, and he helps his daughter, and he goes after Hill, and... I believe he grabs Hill's head and gouges his eyeballs out.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the moment where, you know, for just one last final push, the father figure comes back.
Yeah, finally. The Dean didn't seem like a nice guy to begin with, but he didn't seem like a dishonorable person. So, right. I mean, he was neither here nor there. He was looking out for the interests of the university a lot, but he was also looking out for his daughter because he didn't want her to get in a situation with a med student who doesn't have a lot of money, doesn't have a lot of security at the moment. So he's trying to do what's best for his school and what's best for his daughter and also what's best for his students in the long run. Right. And his fate in the movie is really kind of tragic if you look at
Very tragic. And I think it's important to point out that he doesn't succeed in saving his daughter.
No.
Megan dies.
She dies.
And I believe West dies.
West dies too.
West is gone. Megan's gone. Dean Halsey's gone. But Dan Cain is still there.
And we have a bit of a parallelism to the very beginning of the movie because Dan scoops up Megan's body and runs down to the emergency room thinking that she still is alive and asks for help and asks for someone to resuscitate her. And he does everything himself. Does the compressions.
Yep.
Does the paddles, everything, and she's dead.
Then it's no go.
And all of the doctors and the nurses walk away just to give him some privacy.
And while he's in the room, privately...
Mourning,
heavily mourning, he then realizes, I have a way I can fix this. Pulls out the serum.
He has one last vial of the serum.
And it goes to black as he is in the process of injecting her.
And that was the best way to end the movie.
Yeah, it was amazing. And now here we have Dan Cain becoming Herbert West.
Yes.
He is picking up where West left off, in a sense. And West was potentially picking up where his mentor had left off.
And the thing is though, that in this context, I think you could say that the titular reanimator is not West. West is the scientist.
Right.
Dan Cain is now the reanimator.
And it's interesting you say that because I have not seen it, but I do know the follow-up to this is called Bride of the Reanimator. Which is very Frankenstein and leads you to believe they're going to pick up right where they left off with this first film. And I assume they do.
Well, we will have to wait for it to hit Netflix streaming so that we can go ahead and view that. But, I mean, the thing is that Dan Cain doesn't choose anything for himself through the entire moment until he thinks he has lost the person who is most precious to him.
Right. He just can't deal with it.
He can't deal with it.
And so he's willing to take the chance.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is that the movie ends when he has this self-discovery.
Yep. He actually grows a pair, in a sense, and decides to be bold and make his own decision. It's probably a wrong decision.
Very wrong decision.
Very wrong.
I can guarantee that he does not get his medical license.
Oh, yeah. No way. But I will say, this whole film just points out the underlying theme of don't mess with science too much, humans, please.
Right.
Please, because if you're going to go and do something crazy like this, this is potentially what can happen. You might not be prepared for what's going to come out of this.
Okay, well, this was your movie, so what is your final assessment of Reanimator?
Okay, Reanimator. This was not the first time I've seen it. I've seen it a few times prior. A lot of great things about it, a lot of good cinematography in it. Like I said, the practical effects are outstanding. The creativity is great. It's a well-written story. There's a lot of good acting in it, too. You know, it doesn't fit into your typical terribly acted horror film.
Right.
There's good acting. The soundtrack was appropriate, especially with the comedic scenes.
Yes.
They were able to easily cue you into how you should be feeling about those. Overall, I quite enjoyed it. I don't think it was the best film ever, but quite accomplished. I want to give it 3.5 stars.
Okay. Well, I felt that it is a well-edited film that uses sound and its mid-80s effects well. Reanimator is the kind of film that can successfully be watched on its own or with a large group of friends. So if you're looking for something to do at a party for next Halloween,
mm-hmm.
highly recommended. It knows the limitations of its inspirations, and it knows well when to poke fun at itself, which is hard for a movie to do.
Very true.
If you want a Lovecraft double feature, like I mentioned before, Into the Mouth of Madness, which is a Carpenter film, would go really well with this particular piece. So again, just like you, I really enjoyed this movie. Didn't think it was the best thing I had ever seen in the world, but I definitely liked it and gave it 3.5 stars.
Oh, wow. We're right on.
Yeah.
So officially for this podcast, 3.5-star stamp on Reanimator.
Stamp of approval.
And Jeffrey Combs, I love you. Your acting is awesome in Reanimator.
I think there is a man crush going on right now.
Oh, severe man crush.
All right, well, that pretty much does it for this episode of Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night. If I could remember the title of the damn thing, it would be great.
Well, thank you everyone for listening, and I hope you listen next time.
Yep. Until then, see you later.
You've been listening to Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night.
Our theme music was provided by Sweet Wave Audio. To find more royalty-free music for your own projects, check out sweetwaveaudio.co.uk.
And special thanks to Ariana Ramos for her graphic design savvy helping us with our album art.
Visit our website at mostexcellentmovienight.com to listen to other episodes, give us your opinion, and share with us other movies you'd like to have reviewed.
You can also contact us through our email address, mostexcellentmovienight@gmail.com. We would love to read them on the air.
Also, if you could rate and review the podcast on iTunes, we would be your friends for life.
For sure. That's all for now. Thanks for listening to Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night,
where movies are most excellent.
This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.